Blog Talk Radio.
Hey folks, this is Rabbit Rouse, Mr. Bergeron.
Hi, Mr. Bergeron.
And I am chomping at the bit tonight. We got so much shit to talk about. There's just too much news this week, Tony. To do something about that.
What'd you say?
I need you to do something about that.
What am I going to do something about?
Too much news. Too much
news. Wow. Well, no, that's news is not a bad thing. News is a good thing. It keeps us employed.
Okay. So, Sheriff Dunn's going to bounce online here any second. But, sure enough, pretty much the biggest news story in at least mixed martial arts and wrestling is Brock Lesnar. Not surprisingly, like I said, pretty much week after week, he's not going back to the UFC. He is pretty much out saying he's retired from mixed martial arts. The craziest news on this is apparently they offered him 10 times what he used to be paid when he last fought in the UFC.
Really?
10 times, which is, from my knowledge, just looking at the fight pay, just to fight, period, never mind a win bonus, he was getting paid like $400,000. So $400,000 times 10, that's $4 million a fight, and he turned it down. So, very interesting stuff. Here is Tom. Tom, your mic is live.
All right. Yeah, I guess we were talking about Brock.
Brock, yes. Brock is not coming back to the cage. No, he will not be a cage beast. He is an entertainer, he says. And sure enough, like I said, he was very concerned about not only the getting his face kicked in, he did say something about not wanting to make the money and get beat up doing it. But he was also referring to the workouts. Because you can imagine, I mean, wrestling doesn't, I mean, it takes some agility, of course, but doesn't take the kind of workouts it takes to do mixed martial arts at that level. I think both of you know enough about MMA that I could ask you both. Name five people you could see Brock Lesnar beating in the UFC. We might have some tough time coming up with five people right now, you know, have taken that big of a break.
Yeah. So. Well, as I've said all along, I just have never seen any movement in the direction of evolution for him. I don't think he took his stand-up game serious. I don't think he took his submission game serious. And then maybe he just figured at this stage of his life that's not the direction he wants to go in. And it's interesting how you had speculated that maybe he didn't want to be known as a guy that gave up on real fighting. But I guess that's the case.
Part of his reasoning, so even talking to the UFC, probably had something to do with that. But I think in the end, he really thought of it more in the lines of safety. Even though I joked to you, Tom, that I think the Fertittas had that Mexican wrestler whacked this week just to put the...
Well, and like you also mentioned, too, that Vince McMahon must really hate Dana White. He must have made Brock an offer that he couldn't refuse. I mean, maybe you know the details if they were public, but it's quite a story.
Well, I can imagine that he took less money than the UFC was willing to pay him because of talking with his family. I mean, the best article was on Bleacher Report, even though I hate Bleacher Report. First article I read that they got it all together was on there. And they have a very interesting quote from Lesnar himself that's not only highlighted, but it's bold. So, you know, they won't emphasize this point. But, you know, it has all kinds of people giving shouts out to him on Twitter for signing this deal. Here's what Brock said. Lorenzo said to me, "Can we sharpen our pencil? Can we double it?" I said, "It's not about that. I'm calling you to tell you where my heart is, and it's not about the money." And then in the back of his mind, he's thinking, well, yeah, it is about the money, but I don't have to beat myself up for it. That's his exact quote. I don't have to beat myself up for it. So it was make millions fighting in a cage and training to fight like a madman and possibly get diverticulitis again somehow. I don't know if that comes back, but so that was kind of in the back of his mind that he could get another health situation from training that hard. So he didn't want to beat himself up for it. Like I said, that facial scarring, I don't think he appreciated that experience with Cain Velasquez. And probably doesn't want to repeat it, win or lose. So,
or with Overeem or Frank Mir, kind of both ways. I think we could say both. I mean, those were pretty humbling experiences for him. And I just wonder if that is in the back of his mind that he feels that he's just not capable or even willing to try to become capable of evolving his game to really compete at the highest level. And I respect him. I respect his decision. I mean, you can't do this stuff for anyone else. You've got to do it for yourself. You guys know that. Come on.
Well, there's two things I wonder about. I wonder whether it had a lot to do with the fact that he's developed his physique specifically for entertainment in wrestling the last couple of years, and you know whether that means he's done or dabbled in steroids of any kind. I don't know. I'm not saying anything. But, you know, in the WWE, it's a greater possibility. Seeing as they're not, like, rigorously tested at all. So, who knows what his actual motivations are beyond what he said publicly, but I think it had a lot to do with, you know, some of the realities of his physique. I mean, like, you know, any big-time muscular person is going to have a problem with reach, with throwing knees if you got huge legs. You know, he might be able to jump off the top rope in wrestling, but, you know, he practices that how many times before it actually goes down. When you're actually winning a fight and having to make decisions on the fly and all that stuff, so it's a whole different story where your quick twitch muscle and all that stuff have to react. You have to have, you have to be lifting for reps at all, if it's lifting at all, rather than lifting weights for the weights and that definition, which is what he's doing for wrestling. So I think he just did not want to change courses, and he used this whole situation. Because he's smart. I think he literally just knew probably months ago he was going to go with the WWE, but he decided, Vince is pushing my buttons lately, so I'm going to stick it to him and make him think that I'm going with the UFC until the last second. And he did. I mean, it came down to the last hour when they made it. The offer from the UFC to go 10 times his original pay. That was according to the Associated Press during his first stint with the company. 10 times, which to me means $4 million. I don't know, Tom. 400,000 times 10. Isn't that $4 million? My math is pretty bad.
Yeah.
Yes, it is, Rich.
That's for sure. And, you know, there's one part of me, though, that is a little disappointed because, let's face it, I mean, if Brock Lesnar's playing checkers, I'm going to be watching. I mean, he's a fascinating human being. And it would be interesting to see him come back in. He had the trash talk down. I feel from a fan standpoint, and this is very selfish, but yeah, I'm a little let down. I'm a little disappointed, but I have to respect his decision. So, more power to him.
Well, not only does Dana, I think, have a bad relationship with Vince now, for other reasons too, which we'll get to in a minute, but I think Brock, too, probably could take a page out of Rampage Jackson's book and go back, look back and say, you know, it's always better to go with the devil you know. So I think he knows Vince a little bit better and can deal with Vince, even if he has arguments with him, but I bet you that experience when he said that shit about Frank Mir and Dana White came back into the showers after him probably sticks with him as one of those things he doesn't
oh, yeah.
ever do again and have to deal with. So, and you know, I wonder also, did the class action lawsuits have anything to do with his decision. Wondering whether he was going to have to fight for his likeness, stuff like that. He's, like I said, he's a smart enough guy to know all the ins and outs of, you know, whether we should sign a new deal with the UFC, and I just wonder whether that crossed his mind at all. But better news for WWE is not only did they steal a guy back that they thought was leaving them, they also have taken Tap out from the UFC. I always thought the UFC had a major ownership interest in Tap out, but I guess that was put to the side when this Authentic Brands group got involved. So the WWE is buying Tap out. And not only that, but they were rebranding it, relaunching, rebranding it as a WWE product.
Wow. You know what's funny? The term tap out, everybody knows I'm a wrestling nerd. I'm getting ready for WrestleMania this weekend, and I'm going to tell you guys a funny story in a little bit, you know, maybe when we wrap up the show. But for years, I've been watching, at the time, WWF. At the time, I actually watched it when it was WWWF.
Right.
You know, and the tail end of Bruno Sammartino and Bob Backlund and those guys before Hulk Hogan took over. But they didn't actually start using a tap-out submission until Ken Shamrock came on board in the mid-90s. When Shamrock started, and he would get the guys, like, I think he used, like, an ankle lock submission, or you do like a leg bar or whatever, and the guys would tap out for the submission. But back before that, no. Basically, what would happen is, like, say they got the guy in the Boston Crab or the Camel Clutch or the Figure Four. The guy would, like, kind of wave his hand at the referee and be like, I quit, I give. I give up. And that would be the submission. Because I remember even watching an old match on YouTube, and I forget who it was.
You there, Tony?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, we lost Tony? Tony, stop talking. Break up.
Whoa. Gremlins are working, huh?
I guess so. He's disconnected. In mid-sentence. He doesn't finish the thought and then hang up. Boom.
I didn't know if that was you or me.
I don't know. I think it was on your end because...
I saw my thing could call Phil. I'm in the middle of a pretty wicked thunderstorm right now.
Oh, yeah. It's raining up here.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know if... it's raining pretty good out here. But no, I was saying back in the day, I remember watching a match on YouTube, and whoever it was had Hulk Hogan, like the Boston Crab at a Figure Four, and he's a cap in the ground. But what that was signifying back in the 80s was, like, I'm pumping myself up for the comeback. Then there was somebody comment on YouTube, Hogan gave up, he submitted, why did the match, you know, or he tapped out? It's like, no, they didn't use a tap out turn at that time. So it was like that changed when Ken Shamrock really came on board. So that's when they started using that, 96-ish, 97-ish. And then a couple of years later, Vince is taking it. It's his now.
Oh, my God. Listen to this. This is what he said in the press release, Vince. WWE is always looking for new opportunities to partner with best-in-class organizations, develop new products for our fans, and to drive shareholder value. So this was a big move for making more money for the WWE, get more people to buy stock. He also added, this joint venture aligns with our strategic approach, and we look forward to building the Tap Out brand. And this is the funny part, because Zion's pretty much did the same thing, even though the Fajitas still profited off of when they sold it to a Big Red. They decided to go in a different direction. They got out of the MMA business entirely because of their experience with the sale was so horrible, I guess, which is another story. But anyway, they say in this article at the end, the new line of men's and women's apparel is tentatively set to launch in the spring of 2016. But the new branding and packaging includes beverages, supplements, and fitness centers, which was Zion's plan in the very beginning. that's funny to me. That's very funny.
You know, it'll be very interesting. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they rebrand that, though, because Tap Out probably even as long as 5-6 years ago lost its cool factor in the MMA community. So they're going to have to really come up with something different because, you know, the attitude was by the time all the noobs, as they called them, were wearing Tap Out shirts, that was considered, well, you know, not cool.
Well, for once, the UFC took a week off. They're not having upcoming fights this week, but they did have some fights over the weekend. Damian Maia, I thought he looked pretty bad, especially in the last round. He kind of just tried to ride Ryan LaFleur the whole time, and I also read somewhere that Ryan LaFleur broke his hand in the first round. So, amazing comeback try for a guy with a broken hand coming out in the fifth round and trying to take Damian Maia out to the point where Damian was flopping on the ground to the point where he got a penalty for basically stalling. He's flopping on the ground trying to get Ryan to hop on top of him instead of engaging in kickboxing on the feet. He said, fuck this. I'm hanging out down here. Get him down here. Stand there and catch your breath.
Well, I'll say I was impressed with his takedown skills. Taking down a good wrestler is never an easy task. But I kind of wonder what has happened to that magic submission game that he had, you know, going back maybe even 10 years ago when he first came around. Because I don't know if you were watching then, but I mean, he just seemed to pull these things off like magic. And now it's they're just few and far in between. I don't know if it's age is catching up to him. So.
Well, I mean, Russell seemed like he came into the fight in shape. He's obviously undefeated, so you know, this was a tough challenge for Damian. He's in front of his home fans. It was pretty tough for him, just to hold Brian down. Even though he did, you know, win every round up until the fifth, I think. He just didn't look dynamic enough to be talking about a title shot, that's for sure. And there he is at the end of the fight talking about a title shot. You know. Anyway, Josh Koscheck, no surprise, lost again. They said somewhere this is his fifth or sixth loss in a row, and they still haven't thrown him out. I mean, talk about class action lawsuits. That could be a big piece of evidence for a lot of people who were kicked out after two or three losses. Here's
well, from what I understand, Dana was going to talk to him and urge him toward retirement. And, you know, I just don't think he's ever been the same since that St. Pierre fight, the rematch, because in the first fight, St. Pierre out-wrestled him, which was astonishing considering the fact that Koscheck's wrestling credentials are impeccable. And the second fight, you know, it's an old cliche, even sometimes among boxers, the jab is underutilized. And to me, I think the jab's the most important punch in boxing. What do you say, Tony?
Yeah. Aside from my left hook, of course. But, you're right, because when I train anybody, I make them jab to the blue in the face. Because I feel like the jab does so many different, jobs out there. You know, it can set up, you know, a power punch. It can be
right.
A pretty hard punch, and you can hurt an opponent with a jab. A guy like George Foreman, how many guys did he really bust up with his jab alone? So he lives
exactly.
The same thing. You can slash a guy with a jab, cut a guy up with a jab like an Ali would do. But at the same time, you can back a guy up with a jab, but then also you can keep a guy from attacking you with a jab.
Yeah, it's like there's an old cliche, when you don't know what else to do, jab. And I remember Andy Gannigan, former lightweight champ, he would just kind of flick his jab out there just to try to slide in behind it and throw the combinations, those big, heavy combinations. But it's so versatile. And if you remember, before that rematch, St. Pierre went out to Los Angeles to the wild card and worked with Freddie Roach. and he developed a very powerful jab. Well, he broke Koscheck's orbital bone, and in a couple of fights after that, Koscheck would get hit, and he'd balloon up. I don't think he ever was the same after that rematch, so I think it's he just can't take a punch. I mean, it's definitely time for him to quit, so we'll see
really
what happens.
Because he's off 2 or 3 weeks rest, and they throw him in there against Eric Silva, who's a horse, and there's really no chance for him in that fight. I mean, it's totally outclassed. And you know, a guy like him, if they're going to keep him on the roster, they have to be real about it. You know, I'm sure the matchmakers can come up with somebody that he can actually compete with on the roster, rather than throwing him in with a guy like Eric Silva, who made him look like a toothpick when they're standing next to each other.
But how sad that is, though. How sad that they've got to get someone not even in the top 20 that he can compete with. I mean, here's a guy that was a legitimate title threat. I mean, he moved into the top 10 very quick. Too bad for him that he came along in the era of George St. Pierre, and he just couldn't handle St. Pierre anywhere. I mean, he couldn't stop St. Pierre's takedown, and that first fight, St. Pierre just took him down at will, just pounded him. Second fight, he tried to uncork that right hand, but he telegraphed it, and St. Pierre had come in with that power jab. St. Pierre wasn't just sticking it a bit. He was cooking with it. And you've seen the results. I mean, Koscheck's face was a mess, and again, I'm not Koscheck. I'm not the matchmaker, but it's kind of sad how, you know, if you're at that level, and then you fall into where he's at now, but so hard to quit. Maybe in his mind he's made a lot of rationalizations or excuses for his performance and thinks he can come back. So maybe they'll keep giving him chances.
And these younger guys coming up just to take a fight. And I think the UFC is kind of going down a dangerous road with this shit. And they started with Cowboy taking a short fight. And now all these other guys think they can do the same thing. Because they're not making enough money to have 2 or 3 fights a year. Some of these guys want 4 or 5 fights a year because not only do they get the chance to get the fight pay, but they get the bonus pay possibly, or the win money. They win. So I think they're really, they're probably not getting enough counseling of how to spend and save money, or they're just spending way too much on camps. That was the case with Cerrone. That's really tricky. The second fight so quickly. He was all for how much he spent on equity. So, I don't know. I mean, it's always comes back to money, but what Josh is going to do, he's just going to keep fighting for that high paycheck. I mean, I think last fight check I saw for he was getting, even for a loss, he was getting like 60 grand. So, that's pretty damn good just to show off. He's still trying. I mean, who am I to knock him? He did almost last one, which is more than I can probably say for myself. Anyway, Leonardo Santos beat Tony Hart by submission. We think it's still second round, and that will be pretty interesting. Another person who should probably retire, I hate to say it, because I've seen her fight in person. You know, she's on the smaller circuit. She's incredible, but she stepped up to the UFC level in a Baszler at different way. Again, she down the first round and didn't knock her either because she kicked so hard at the knee, I think she dislocated right on the spot. But she did not look good at all after that. They weren't throwing punches well. Didn't seem to be taking punches well at all. Or maybe she needs to go back down to the lower circuits, but hasn't been looking like a see really. Here's what it is. Amanda Nunes tuned her up pretty good. Took her out first round. That's it about. We had Gilbert Burns beat Alex Oliveira by an armbar in the third round. 4 to 6 seconds left there. Well, we had Alfredo Castro beat Andre Sheely by triangle choke in the first round. We had the Jimmy Silva walks away with a technical submission that never happened against Drew Dober. Referee really fucked up. He's probably not going to work for the UFC. He's basically imagined that. He never saw one. There was never one on video. Leandro Silva didn't even have the choke.
Yeah, that was as bad as I've ever seen. Now, I don't know if it was an honest mistake and the referee was just completely, totally incompetent and over his head, or something else. You got to wonder. But I will say, there were a couple of very interesting submission clinics. There was almost a submission from Manuma Plata, which is just about, I think maybe there's been one that I've seen in all these years. And it looked like there was going to be a second one. That was very interesting. So jiu-jitsu's not dead.
Right. Well, I totally forgot to mention, we're a half hour in just about. We do have a guest coming on tonight, 9:15. Sid El Harak, who is fighting Chris Pearson on the Mayweather-Pacquiao undercard. And Pearson's undefeated. Harak has a couple tough losses on his record, but he's a really tough kid. And, he's fighting the guy from Mayweather Promotion Stables, so we know he's got an uphill climb in this fight. I'm really interested to kind of get in his brain and find out, what he's looking forward to here and how he's preparing for this one, because this is a huge opportunity to just go out there and embarrass this kid in his home turf in Vegas, try to knock him out. So I'm sure that's probably his top of his mind if he can do it, to knock him out so it doesn't have to go to a decision. But somebody's first loss like that, too, in his home territory, that's pretty impressive. So we'll talk to him about that and a whole bunch of other things, I'm sure. His record is 12-2-2, so he's had a couple draws, too. 7 knockouts, and Pearson is 11-0 with 9 knockouts. And El Harak was born in London, relocated to California as a teenager, and turned pro in 2008, winning his first 8 fights. He had his showbox debut against fellow unbeaten fighter Leonard Lane. And he had a real tough time making weight and couldn't rehydrate and suffered a second round stoppage. And he went 3 fights without getting a loss, and he had a bad Jesus fight of the week, but Jesus Soto Bass and had a tough fight. It was a debatable setback. It was a split decision. So he came back with 2 straight third round stoppages and a draw against Luis Grajeda. So we'll pick his brain a little bit. Ask him, of course, about Pacquiao versus Floyd. What he thinks about that whole thing. Some interesting people coming out of the woodwork, Tony, making some predictions. Guess who came out just the other day and said it's rooting for Pacquiao. Picking Pacquiao to win, actually.
What were you going to say?
Guess who came out and said Pacquiao was going to win the fight?
You said guess who? I thought you were going to say. I thought it, when you said the one word, I thought you said he's like a big whatever. So, because he didn't say that, so that kind of opens my mind back up.
He's a big face in boxing, that's for sure.
He's a big face in boxing?
The big figure in boxing, yes. He's got a little piece missing, though.
he's got what?
A little piece missing. That should be enough of a clue.
Little piece missing. When you said he's a big name in boxing, I was going to say Bernard Hopkins.
I don't know if he said Manny or not, but it's actually Evander Holyfield. Came out.
Hey, yeah, you're right. Piece missing. I get it now.
Mike Tyson brought it back to him in the commercial, though, so it's all good. Anyway. Yeah, Evander Holyfield said he thinks Manny's going to win this fight. vicious, ugly rumor circulating this week that Judah knocked Mayweather out in sparring. And if there's any truth to this, apparently the eyewitness testimony that I read was that Mayweather was dropped to his knee for more than 10 seconds from a body shot.
Really?
From a body shot.
From a body shot.
Yeah, so that's not really a knockout unless there's really a count going and a referee in the ring. To me, if you get hit with a tough shot, you think you're
actually... Did Judah get fired?
Actually, he didn't get fired. He denied that. He also denied that Floyd beat him to a bloody pulp after the shot.
Oh, I wish we had some YouTube action on that one. Hey, what did you guys think
really?
Hopkins, of Bernard's analysis of this fight? Or, have you read that, Tony? What Bernard said about it?
I have not.
Okay, well, to bring you up to speed, Bernard feels that Manny's going to come out and really be a whirlwind for the first half of the fight, and assuming that Floyd can stay away from that tsunami, he's going with Floyd to win a decision. But the interesting thing there was he said that, you know, because we're asked always, it always comes up about the Marquez fight with Manny. How much did that take out of him? And Bernard said...
I did see that, because he wouldn't come out and say that he didn't take a beating, he just walked into a punch.
Right. Okay, well, now, my take on it, and I want to get the take of you two guys, but my take is, I think it depends on the fighter. I mean, fighters aren't they don't have a uniform response to anything. I mean, it's like people in general. I mean, sometimes guys can come back from something a lot quicker than other guys can. And I would agree with Bernard that there's nothing worse, well, like an Anthony Pettis-type beating will be hard to come back from when you're just beaten senselessly for every minute of the fight. Now, and in boxing, when do the deaths occur? Well, they occur in the lighter weights in the later rounds from the cumulative effect of
right.
all those punches. You know, we've been on that before, but the whole thing is the psychological... You know, the psychological damage of getting floored like that, maybe Manny's put that behind him. I mean, I hope he has for his sake. But my opinion, it just depends on the individual, but I'd like to hear what you guys think about that.
Wow.
Would you like to get there, Rich?
I'm just going to say one quick thing, and I'll let the expert take over, sorry. But I'll tell you this. Manny has been screwed before. And pretty much by his own promoter, I think, because I think Bob Arum had a lot to do with his controversial decision loss there to Jim Radley. But let's just say that, and that, I think, knowing that he's fighting in Floyd's backyard, he has to be working on a knockout strategy. That's the only thing that makes any sense to me. And Hopkins is right to hesitate when he says, and he says Floyd can just as well lose his win. He also says, I say Floyd wins by controversial decision. So right there, you know, there's a big, pretty big thing in boxing saying that it's going to be controversy already. So it even happens. And I can imagine that, I mean, because Floyd has a lot more power, I think, than Arum in Vegas. Especially, you know, his network of money interests in the town.
Floyd has a lot of power out in Vegas, but look at this. Look at some of his recent fights. When he fought Canelo Alvarez, one of the judges had that fight even. There was another fight that he had up there. And I forget
that was probably the one thing that the judge gave to the other camp.
Yeah. And then there was another fight up there. I forget if it was the Robert Guerrero fight, but there was another fight in there in that relatively same time frame that one of the judges had even. So with the hometown advantage for Mayweather being in Vegas, I don't think that's going to be as big a factor as people think. The fight with Madonna, the first fight, one of the judges had it even. That might have been the other one I was thinking of. But so there's been a couple majority decisions in there. So things are tightening up, you know, with Mayweather out there in Vegas. And these are fights that I thought he won the first Madonna fight. I mean, it was dicey for a little bit, but I still thought he won. And the Canelo fight, I thought he dominated like 11 of the 12 rounds pretty handily. You know, obviously, yeah, Pacquiao with that loss to Bradley a couple years ago, which I thought he dominated 11 of the 12 rounds. But Pacquiao is a very popular, fighter out in Las Vegas. I was at his fight last year when he fought the rematch with Timothy Bradley out there. And every time they showed him on the screen, whether it was walking in, whether it was, you know, getting his hands wrapped, or whether it was warming up, people cheered like you wouldn't believe. When Bradley was shown, he was booed out of the building. It was a very pro-Pacquiao card. So I think you're going to see a lot of a division. You're going to see split there. Now, with regard to the fight itself, and I've come out and I've said this, if the fight is remotely close, I think Pacquiao will get a decision. And it all comes down to money. Mayweather wins this fight. For argument's sake, Pacquiao dominates the fight. He kicks the crap out of Mayweather, and it goes the distance. Just like Pacquiao Bradley won. And they say the winner by split decision or whatever. Floyd Mayweather. Mayweather's going to turn around and say, I beat him. I can walk away from this now. And I can retire. I can do my one more fight. I can step up, try to get a middleweight title, so on and so forth. I can try to fight Cotto again for a middleweight title, whatever. He can walk away. If they turn around and they say the winner, Manny Pacquiao, well, he's going to turn around and say, oh, that's bullshit, whether he gets his ass kicked or not. I want a rematch. And then what happens? You make more money.
Right.
So, I mean, that's my one take on it. Now, I'm starting to have visions, you know, come up, you know, a little bit about the fight. I just got my Ring magazine the other day with a 32-page preview, so I just started thumbing through it a little bit, and they were asking some, you know, different people, different fighters. And one question they were asking fighters is, like, about getting knocked down. Not even getting knocked out, just knocked down, and what was your reaction to it like? You know, maybe the first time you were ever knocked down. And one of the guys, and this wasn't even in regards to Pacquiao Mayweather, this was just in regards to just another topic. What do you see when you get knocked down? They asked one guy, and he's like, I was doing great. Next thing you know, the four came up really fast. And I was like, what am I doing down here? And believe me, I know that feeling, because there have been times that I've been kicking somebody's ass, and they're standing on the ground and saying, well, how did I get down here? Let me get up real quick. But the one guy they asked was Zab Judah. And Zab talked about the first time he got knocked down, and I think it was against Jan Bergman in the fight where Zab won his first title. And he's like, I had, like, so many fights going up before that, I'd never been knocked down. After that, I found myself on the canvas a number of times. And that, like, I think it was a lot of it was psychological, too. It was like your body just got used to going down when you got hit. That's his point on it. And, you know, with Dr. Cox, he say something like that. Cause I remember in my first sparring session, I got knocked on my ass. And that was against a guy that was a senior who was getting ready to graduate. He was an All-American. He was a really good fighter. And Doc wanted him to kind of teach me a lesson because I was a, you know, cocky 18-year-old. So he puts this guy, Dirk, in there with me, and Dirk kicked the crap out of me. And Dirk knocked me on my ass. And then Doc said, all right, you guys had enough or whatever. And I'm wobbling out of there. Well, the next day, I'm back in there, and I'm like, I want to spar again. Not necessarily Dirk. Actually, I don't want Dirk. But give me, like, a rookie. Just like, at least I can feel better about myself. And Doc says, no, I'm not letting you spar. First of all, I want you to think about the beating you got yesterday and why I had somebody do this to you. And second of all, I don't want you, you know, taking shots at the head. And this is before you had all the concussion tests and all shit like that. It was basically, as Doc said, I don't want you to get a soft brain. And not meaning brain damage, soft brain, which means, like, you're almost equipped to go down as soon as you get hit.
Well, I mean, we'll probably talk a lot more about this subject next week. I'm trying to get a boy that hooked us up tonight, Matt Yano, back on the show. Yeah, better make sure you work on your speech speed there, Tony. Yano will run circles around you. He was just bringing up the subject on the email of that guy Tom, the other Tom. From some Japanese website that he debated on the MMA versus boxing debate.
I remember that. In fact, I think that was the week before you had me do the debate. I was doing a debate against like another MMA like writer. And I remember you called me before the debate and you're like, listen, I don't want you to do what Yano did last week. He basically blasted this guy. He was all over the guy. The guy didn't know what to say. And I'm like, no, I'll be more professional. I'll give the other guy a chance to talk.
I mean, that was such a good idea at the time, too. It was really, MMA really hadn't latched on yet. And, you know, a lot of people in boxing were kind of pissed about people losing interest in boxing and starting to watch that. I was losing interest in boxing, too, and starting to watch MMA at the time. So, perfect timing. But I don't even know where to start looking for those recordings. I'm sure I probably do still have them on a computer of mine, but... And that would be classic. I was just telling Yano, that was probably the only person I could find in the world who could at least try to speak as quick as you could. Oh, it was so funny because I couldn't barely get a word in edgewise when they were going at it. They took it seriously. I mean, it was like a verbal fight. Anyway. Getting on to the next subject here. I told you there's a lot of news this week. Boxing news too. Carl Froch and Andre Ward talking about a big fight for the WBA Super Middleweight Championship. Ward's 27-0, 14 KOs. Froch is 33-2 with 24 KOs. And Froch already vacated his 168 IBF. Belt and 168 pounds. And when the IBF tried to get him to face James DeGale, I don't know whether he was concerned about DeGale's style or just wanted to fight a bigger name, but he's got a bigger name now. And I think he's speculated here as doing this because he didn't want to lose another title. This was a story that he had apparently. And if anybody thought, signing up with Rock Nation was going to stall him, I guess they're wrong. Namely me, I think I said that. Especially with Al Haymon doing all that stuff, I figured that's a bad move, being Rock Nation's only superstar. But apparently they got the rights to do the fight now, and they think they'll be able to win the purse bid and get the fight staged in the United States, which would be really the first time Carl's been at this level in a big fight in the United States, whether it's in Vegas or New York, I don't know, but knowing that Jay-Z's roots there in New York, I would think he'd probably try to get it in Brooklyn or something, when they have that casino there. Anyway, the promoter for Froch is actually still negotiating with Rock Nation. I can imagine probably takes longer with somebody who hasn't been doing this as long as a seasoned promoter. And Eddie Hearn, who promotes Froch, says, Carl will take that fight if he has to. Carl doesn't really like Andre Ward. I think the feeling's mutual. He's not going to take a step aside for him. It wasn't really the fight we were looking at, but it's been ordered. It's a tough fight for both of them and also for Andre Ward. It's been 2 years out. I can't think it's a great place to fight for Ward in Nottingham against Carl Froch because he's tough to beat in his hometown. But, like I said, it's probably not going to happen in that kingdom. Okay. So there's that fight, and there's a former guest of ours, Roy Jones Jr. He fought just 3 weeks ago, but guess what? He's going to fight again this Saturday night. And he's going to be fighting in his hometown for once. For the first time in a long time, I guess, Pensacola Bay in Pensacola, Florida. He's fighting what they say is another club fighter, Paul Vasquez, who's 10-6-1 with 3 knockouts. And Vasquez said he's going to win. It's a 10-round cruiserweight bout. And first fight in Pensacola for Jones.
that, or who was that?
Who was that? We'll see if the Boxing Rain Man can get this one.
March of 2019, asking me to go back 6 years, and I'm sure he's won in Pensacola, so that was before he had the, that was between his losses to Calzaghe, which was 2008, I believe, and then his loss to Hopkins, which was 2010. By not looking, I'm drawing a blank. I do not remember.
Omar Sheikha stoppage in the fifth round.
You know what? Yep, you're right. I remember reading about that, and didn't we talk to Omar about that fight too?
Yeah, probably. But yeah, Roy is actually fighting on this card. It's a mixed martial arts. Mixed martial arts and boxing card. His record stands right now at 60 wins, 8 losses, 43 knockouts. He's 46 years old. And he's still doing the commentary stuff too all the time. So he's staying very busy, and he's the promoter for his own fight. So God love the guy. He's doing a lot for the boxing world in general.
Yeah.
And still fighting. Even if they call it a club fighter, it doesn't really matter to me. He's still winning and winning commandingly. We'll see. Vasquez is 36 years old, 10 years younger. He has lost 2 fights in a row, but he says, "I jumped at the chance to fight Roy Jones. It's truly an honor for me. But make no mistake, I'm coming to win." And I guess he's taking a page out of Boyd Nelson's book here a little bit. He's going to donate his purse to a children's hospital.
Okay.
Nice guy. How about this for a transition? Here's somebody who's not going to donate their purse to any hospital, except the one he's going to go to for a broken rib. TJ Dillashaw out of the rematch with Renan Barao in the fight that was supposed to headline UFC 186, and this was kind of interesting because the commercials were just going out for this event. Right on the same show where they were announcing this fight was off, there was a commercial for this fight. And they're saying, 2 title fights, 1 epic event. I guess now it's a half epic event with one fight. But yeah, TJ busted his rib. I know what's happened to me. It sucks. It's not something you can even do light work with and be comfortable. So I don't blame him. But what a curse is on this fight. Just can't seem to go down. Renan Barao fell in the tub the last time it was supposed to happen. Got knocked out in the tub. And not yet in weigh-in now. There's no immediate timetable for Dillashaw to come back. But rib injury, that's literally a 6-week process for most people who aren't athletic, so I think he should be back in 6 weeks to training at least, whether it's at full strength to fight or not. I don't know, that might take up to a year. But we'll see. Like I said, their last fight was supposed to be a while back, UFC 177 in August. And then he fell in the tub. So, flyweight title fight now is the main event. And I said it before, I'll say it again, Demetrius Johnson is always boring. So, this is going to be a really half-epic event, in my opinion. Fighting Kyoji Horiguchi, a Japanese fighter who, I don't know. I haven't really kept a tally, but they seem like they have a lot of struggles in the UFC, these Japanese fighters. There's a few exceptions, of course, but here's a guy trying to take on the champion at flyweight. Good luck. Good luck. Maybe you can put your Japanese buddies on the map and make it happen, but Demetrius is just so dynamic and overpowering and just so smart with his fighting style. So that's why it's boring. You can't knock people out because he's a flyweight. Well, it's tough. Also on the card is supposed to be the return of Rampage Jackson against what I think is going to be a fresh punching bag, Fabio Maldonado. Talk about a boxing record, Tony. If you want to get a good laugh, look up Fabio Maldonado's boxing record and try to tell me if you'd be afraid to fight him.
What is it?
He's like 21-2 with 20 knockouts, but it's like every single fight he's had is in his hometown in Brazil, and it's against a bum. So, like, literally a bum. He must have gotten off the street. 0-1 and 0-2 and 0-4 and 1-82. No, I don't know. I did it once on the air before, and it was pretty bad. Michael Bisping's also on the card against C.B. Dolloway, who's surprisingly back pretty quick from getting his rib messed up by a karate expert there, Mr. Machida. Then we had Eve Jabouin versus Thomas Almeida scheduled for this card. So hopefully they'll be able to overcome that problem. Once again, Albany is in the news with the UFC. They've been going over the mixed martial arts bill that has actually now been sponsored by a different guy now, but the guy that took Sheldon Silver's place actually was one of the authors of this bill. So just think about that for a second, on how likely it's going to be that New York is going to legalize mixed martial arts now. Passed by my lucky number, 47-14. Majority of both parties supported it in the Senate this week. Had multiple members vote against the proposal, but some pretty stupid shit that came out of these debates. I mean, you talk about brain-dead politicians. These people need some help. Some people brought up some real concerns like dementia and other traumatic brain disorders, stuff like that, but get a load of this. One guy, it was a girl who brought up dementia and other traumatic brain disorders. Liz Krueger, okay, senator. This senator says that the sport does not empower women, and she read a letter from an opponent who said it simply lets them show off their, quote, tits and ass, unquote, in a man similar to a t-shirt contest. Are you shitting me? I mean, talk about the most irresponsible thing to do. I mean, I can understand listening to your constituents, but furthering a point that just is not true at that level, where people have to make decisions being made, I mean, that is unacceptable. One guy made a joke, we're more concerned, clearly, he said, about balls than brains. They were pissed that people were required to wear cups and not protective gear. That was another senator, Brad Hoyle. That's a joke. One senator pointed to a study from Johns Hopkins University that claimed the sport was safe. He also argued that MMA was no different from any other sport that is legal in New York State. Physical harm can come from many other forms of athletic competition. Fighters participate willingly and have frequently highlighted the economic benefits of legalization, such as sports have done. So, this has happened multiple times before. The previous 5 years, 5 sessions, I guess, Senate has voted on this, but this time could be very different. Sheldon Silver is out, as I said. Ronda Rousey went and visited the governor just as an extra insurance policy to make sure that he considers this in his budget next year, because that's another big step. You got to put it in the budget, make it official. So very encouraging stuff, I think. Unlike some of the other news, we got to get to quickly here. We're talking a lot about wrestling this show. I did quickly mention it in passing as that Fertitta's in another conspiracy theory here. Mexican wrestling star Hijo del Perro Aguayo. He had a stroke and a heart attack at the same time, apparently, after being kicked in the face or the neck. So makes you wonder. I mean, I'm joking about the assassination attempt and all that shit, but
did he have a stroke himself? Did he have a stroke and a heart attack as a result from the kick? I mean, I saw the video. I saw the drop kick. It was, you know, just a regular drop kick. It might have caught him a little bit on the neck area. But, I mean, did that cause his stroke and heart attack? Or was it just a case of bad timing?
Well, autopsy said he died of trauma to the neck and a cervical fracture.
But, okay.
The latest thing I saw that said that he had suffered a stroke and a heart attack at the same time. So, I've never heard of that happening.
Neither have I. So, you can come back from a stroke, you can come back from a heart attack. I don't know anybody that's coming back from a stroke and a heart attack at the same time.
Right. And, of course, the article mentions wrestling has seen death before. Owen Hart is probably the most famous recent case. That was 1999. But some other people might remember Iron Mike DiBiase, died in the ring of a heart attack back in 1969.
I read about another one. Who was the other one I remember hearing about? I know the guy that killed him was Ox Baker, and I'm trying to remember. Ray Dunkel, I think his name was. And they were doing the match, and he was in there with Big Ox Baker with a Fu Manchu, and Ox Baker hit him with a heart punch, and then, you know, Ray went and they finished the match. Ray beat him, and after the match was over, Ray went into the shower and dropped over, and they said that was a match. They were hitting each other pretty hard in there, and they said the Ox Baker punch to the heart actually, like, damaged. It actually caused his heart to, basically stop. A couple years ago, real close to a tragic event, with Jerry the King Lawler. Lawler wrestled on a card. It was a Monday Night Raw card, a live card. Lawler wrestled, and he said during the match, I forget if he's in there with Dolph Ziggler or who he's in there with, but he said at one point, Ziggler dropped him, like 10 consecutive elbows on him. And Lawler was saying, man, he's dropping him kind of hard. And then however the match ended, it ended. And then Lawler went back to his commentary position. And then, like, the next match, it was like, you know, they're announcing they're doing their job. And then next thing you know, you hear silence. And the match keeps going on. And then finally, Michael Cole got on there. He goes, listen, he goes, what happened was, he goes, we're in the middle of the match, and then Jerry collapsed. He goes, right at the desk. It sounded like he was snoring almost. And he goes, I recognized something was wrong, so I just hit our announcer, microphones on mute. And started yelling for the paramedics, and they came down. And Jerry Lawler actually, they said, flatlined in the dressing room. And they were able to revive him. They took him to the hospital. Then he started, breathing on his own, started communicating on his own. And then I'm not sure if he has since wrestled, but I mean, he still does the commentary.
Right. Yeah, I've actually seen some vintage videos of Jerry Lawler back in the day, and back when they called him the King, and
he was pretty good
heel, pretty good. Well, he didn't always have the best physique, but he acted like he was king shit.
That's right.
Kind of like only a couple notches down from the Millionaire Man there, or Mr. Perfect. Mr. Perfect, that's who I'm thinking of. That was funny. Anyway, yeah, that's a tragic death for wrestling. And it actually was a former WWE guy who laid the kick on
him.
So, it's kind of weird. It's kind of weird that it went down like that at this time, too. I mean, I'm totally joking. I don't want to get sued again. But the Fertitta is doing this, but, I mean, talk about odd timing. A wrestler dies in the ring the same week Brock has to make his big decision. Oh, too crazy. Talked about mixed martial arts, going to New York. See what Then we got a couple of mixed martial arts cards this weekend. Tomorrow night we got the Bellator. Joe Warren versus Marcus Galvo. Talk about a hero for old guys everywhere. Joe Warren is a little lighter, but he's kind of like our generation's Randy Couture right now. And he does the commentary, too, like Roy Jones Jr. So I'll be rooting for him against Galvo. But Galvo had a very tough fight and a very impressive comeback in his last fight to get to this point. So this one is one of the Bellator fights I've been looking forward to for a while. Some of these other ones, not so much, except for Ryan Couture. Speaking of Coutures, he's third fiddle on this card. He's 9-3, fighting Dakota Cochran, who's 18-7. So those will show you, you know, what they think of Ryan's skills. They're really testing him out there with Dakota. We also have Francis Carmont in co-main event against Guilherme Viana. And Viana is such a fierce competitor, he doesn't even have a picture on Sherdog. Francis Carmont is 22-10, so 6-1 versus 22-10. That might be our mismatch of the week. We'll see, though. Maybe it's maybe there's something we don't know about Guilherme. Let's have Orlando Coulter, 4-1, fighting Jeremiah O'Neill, who's 13-24. It's a rough record. And it just kind of gets worse in there. There's only really two other fights worth really mentioning on this card. Alejandro Villalobos, 17-3, fighting Emmanuel Sanchez, who's 9-1. It's a pretty decent matchup. And then we have Elsie Davis, who's 22-6, who I met personally in Iowa. Pretty good dude. He's fighting Hideo Tokoro, who's 32-27-2. What's that for a record? And then we have World Series of Fighting as a big event on Saturday. Undefeated Justin Gaethje, who's 13-0, fights Luis Palomino. Got kind of what looks like a boxing record. He's 23-9. And we have co-main event of Thiago Silva, back in action after his homicidal rampage. He's 16-3, fighting Matt Hamill, who's 11-5, who's back in action after
Matt Hamill. When did he come out of retirement?
Not too long ago. I'm not sure if this is his first fight, but I do remember reading about him coming back a while back, like at least a year ago. We have Jake Hewn, who's 7-3, fighting Teddy Holder, who's 8-1. Timur Valiev, who's 8-1, fighting Ed West, who's 18-9. This one seems like a good matchup. Clifford Starks, 10-2, fighting Krasimir Mladenov, who's 12-0. We got Lucas Montoya, 8-3, fighting Enrique Pina, who's 4-1. Benny Madrid, 7-2, fighting Jimmy Spacuzza, who's 5-2. Brendan Tierney, 11-6, fighting Joseph Gigliotti, 3-0. Randy Steinke, 15-8-1, fighting Juan Archuleta, who's 5-0. And that's pretty much it for real decent matchups. Hector Lombard, that's a kind of quick one. He's out for a year, suspension for his positive test for banned substance after his last fight there. So he will be on the shelf for a year and will be one of the first examples people can point to as a reason why you don't do performance-enhancing drugs, especially with them tightening up on the testing these days. Not a good idea. Trying to keep working. And let's see. We got a Klitschko fight coming up this weekend, don't we?
No, Klitschko's coming up April
25th. Oh.
Yeah, up at the Garden. Madison Square Garden.
All right. Well, actually, there's fights on...
You recommend coming up this weekend. That counts for something, right?
There are fights on ESPN 2 tonight. Friday night fight tonight, right?
Really?
It's going on right now.
Yeah, I better go to work tomorrow.
Round 2 of 6, Ella Bali versus Stafford. Going on right now, and guy I've seen a a couple times out in Vegas, Rand says Bartholomew is vacating his belt at super featherweight, and he's going up to lightweight. This is his first fight at 135, and this fight's going on in Florida. He's fighting a guy named Angino Perez, who's 18-4 with 16 knockouts, 10-round fight. And he only had one title defense against Fernando David Salcido, who was 54-6-3 with 8 knockouts. So already he's giving it up. Of course, he's with Al Haymon. Makes a lot of sense. We know he works with Warrior Boxing. We had his promoter on the show because of his controversial fight there with the kid from Afghanistan/Canada. Well, I'd really still like to see him fight again. Not too afraid. Forget the guy's name, of course. If he won, I would have remembered it. I thought he won, but they couldn't give him the decision. Anyway. So, he also won the title in kind of controversial fashion there against Martinez Mendez, 22-3-1 with 12 knockouts. So, controversy kind of follows him, and he does have some very good natural talent. I've seen him really early in his career, and he moved pretty fast for a guy at that level. Came straight out of Cuba, and he's always looked pretty good when I've seen him, but he's always seemed like he was put in an easy match until that one time they didn't give him a guy that could beat him. He got punched harder than he ever got punched in his life in that fight, I think. Yeah, it was quite the wake-up call for his career, so hopefully he used that as motivation to never let that happen to him again if he wants to remain undefeated. But yeah, that's going on tonight. As for what else, we will get to that later, I guess. I'm going to bring up BoxRec and just make sure I only talk about the good fights. Not the mismatches of the week or anything. We got other stuff to talk about. We got our guest to get on here any minute. As I said earlier.
We get the guest on. I gotta run out real quick. Just give me 2 seconds, okay?
Right.
I'll be back on with the guest.
Sid El Harak. I'm not sure if it's Sid or Said. I think it's spelled like S-A-I-D, but he's got it as Sid, S-I-D, on Facebook, so I don't. We'll have to ask about that. But, again, his record up here and the boxing schedule, and we'll connect with him. And this is actually the first fight I've heard of on the card, period, for the second fight. So I'm kind of excited to find out if he knows of any other fights besides his own. We'll talk to him about that. And if I can get him on here. Also forgot to mention another former guest of ours. I sent you guys the link. Shalito Vincent was featured in a nice little news story the other day. Still doing her thing out there, undefeated. She's lucky 13-0. Got a fight coming up, I think in Rhode Island or Connecticut. Doing good things for herself and for others.
Yeah, that was quite a story. Quite an inspirational story with her.
She just happens to be SH, and I got Sid under SI, so. Coincidentally, that was a good reminder. Okay. Give me one more minute here. We'll get it set up. All right. Adding.
Hello.
Hello, Sid.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing?
Good. I'm glad to connect with you. And I'm excited to talk to you about this big fight you got coming up. You're going up against an undefeated guy here. Tell us what your thoughts are going into this matchup here on a big opportunity card in Las Vegas on the undercard of Pacquiao versus Mayweather, right?
Yeah, that's correct. And to tell you the truth, it's more of an emotional impact on me than anything. And with Chris, I'm fighting Chris Pearson. I'm like, he's 11-0. I think with like 9 knockouts or so. But I look in depth in the record of who he's knocked out and who he's beat. And he's beating people that are supposed to be beat. You know, they're supposed to be beaten. And the one time they stepped up, they gave him Leonardo Turner. He was a 147-pound fighter. He came up to 154 I think it was in like 7 or 10 down days notice, had Chris dropped and won a split decision against Leonardo, which a lot of people said it was controversy. So there's a lot of things that I look into. So I don't really pay too much attention to the record, you know. So I'm actually like, it's a blessing to me to be even in this opportunity, to tell you the truth.
I'm looking at your BoxRec profile here, and it says your country is Morocco, your birthplace is London, and you're living in Henderson, Nevada.
No, I live in Santa Clarita, California.
Oh.
I don't know why they still
I got that wrong.
They still have. They still have Henderson there.
That's a lot of travel. That's a lot of country. The world. What's that like to have that kind of experience?
It's amazing, like to experience the different lifestyles in each continent. You know, like you come from here and you go to England and it's completely different. And you go to England to Morocco and it's a complete opposite too. So I have family all over the world and it's great to get to be able to go to each of those places and know people and I feel like I belong there. You know, like I was born in England, so I feel like I'm British. You know. I've lived in America majority of my life. I was here when I was just about 14. So I've been in America, so I feel like, you know, in a way that I'm American too. Like this is my home as well, and my blood is Moroccan because both my parents are Moroccan. You know, so it's truly an amazing feeling, to tell you the truth.
Awesome. And I imagine the difference between London and Las Vegas must have been night and day to you, huh?
The difference between London and the West Coast in general is very dramatically different.
Especially
London's a city type people, and it's different in weather wise, people wise, transportation wise. You know,
right.
Prices wise, it's expensive in London, very expensive in England. So it's a transformation for sure.
Now, not only is this a big opportunity for you here on this card, but You're facing sort of an uphill battle because you got to fight this guy. He's a Mayweather Promotions guy, and he's fighting in Vegas. And you're kind of coming from outside of Vegas in California, even though it looks like you fought a bunch of times here.
Yeah, I've take all those things into perspective, and it's not the first time I've done it. I did it against Solo Kolas, you know, and I paid the price. They gave him a split decision where, and I'm not just saying it because I'm the fighter that was in the fight. I know I beat Solo at least 7 of those 10 rounds. Like, I know that. There's no way I lost 6 of those 10 rounds. I mean, there's no way. I don't know how those two judges saw that. I lost 6 of those 10 rounds. And in my last fight, I fought a guy on his promoter's card. He was in the Mexican Olympian. I was brought there to lose, supposedly. And I ended up getting a draw. So I know I can't have it a close fight. I got to take it away from from the judges, take it, make it, put it, and make it. So basically, what my first coach ever told me: leave the judges in your own hands. Put the judges in your own hands. But, you know, so I'm working very hard and to do so.
Cool. What do you love most about the sport of boxing?
You know, everything. Not everything. The business aspect. People don't understand. This is a very political, and it could be very dirty at times in the business aspect. But the one thing I love about sport of boxing is that I used to be a soccer player, and I used to work hard. And if your team doesn't work as hard as you do, there's only so far you can go, you know, because you've got to rely on your defense, you've got to rely on your midfield, your goalie, to all be doing what you're doing so you all can prevail to the elite level, you know. When you fail in boxing, the only person you could blame is the man in the mirror. You know, you're responsible for everything. So, I like the competitive nature, like me against mono type like that, but me against another man, studying and seeing what he's doing wrong and capitalizing off his mistakes. And if it has to turn into a dog fight, see whose will will break before the other person's will. You know, there's so many aspects to it that is just beautiful.
Yeah, you know what's funny? Fighting on the Manny Pacquiao versus Mayweather card, and when I was in Vegas, I went to a couple Floyd Mayweather open workouts for his fights.
Yeah.
And I didn't, you know, I wasn't really one of those types who would try to get front and center and, you know, be in the middle of the scrum. I was just taking pictures and hoping to maybe get one question, and I waited until right before he was supposed to hit the mitts, and I figured, well, I'm kind of right next to him on the ring apron, I'm going to ask him now. So I asked him that very same question. The very first word out of his mouth was the very word out of your mouth. He said, everything.
Really?
All he said, because he was in business mode at that time. He didn't want to talk to the board, but I actually had to ask him to get him to answer that. It was kind of funny.
I mean, you just telling me that makes me feel like I'm on the right track mentally with this sport, you know? To be honest with you, like, there's so many times that I was wanting to not quit, but just call it a day with boxing, because things weren't going my way, and I had a lot of things just going, like, no opportunities were opening up for me, and if they did open up, something will happen where it closes, the door closes. And I had a dream, like, a couple of months ago, I had a dream, and it was weird, because I almost got to the day where, that point where I was like, you know what, that's it for me. Then I had a dream of two rings, and I've always remembered it for the rest of my life, and one ring was a man with no legs and no arms, and he was shadowboxing, but he only had stubs, but he didn't look discouraged or anything, and he was trying, and I looked at that, and I remember looking at that, amazed, like, wow, this guy's incredible. And the other ring was a man in a wheelchair, and he was trying to move around the ring like Ali. Same thing, didn't look discouraged, and he was gone. And I woke up that morning, and I felt like a message was sent to me. You know, your time's not up yet. And I get this phone call a month later from my manager telling me would I want to accept this fight, and I said, most definitely. I definitely want to take this fight.
Wow. That's pretty intense.
It's amazing the way that came around, because I honestly was... You know, it was incredible to me the way that worked out.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting you mentioned that, too, because when I was boxing, the year before I went to the Nationals, I fell off a roof and broke my back, almost paralyzed myself, almost ended up.
Wow.
And I came back from that and won a bronze medal at the National College Championships.
See, that's something that you can remember and you can share with people for the rest of your life, you know?
Right.
And if they're serious about what they're doing, they'll take what you're giving them and they'll run with it, you know?
Yeah, they say dreams, they really, they all have some kind of meaning. You just kind of have to figure it out.
Yes, I truly agree. Like,
the message.
Like, in my head, like, I've envisioned stuff. Like, I'm not saying I'm going to be like of course the goal is always to be a world champion and stuff when you do, and you always want to be the best. I would love to make you get a chance to become a world champion. But I've envisioned greater than what I've achieved in boxing. And everyone asks, a few people ask, why do you still box today? Why are you doing it? It's because in my head, I feel like I haven't accomplished what I'll set out to accomplish it. I envision something beautiful, you know?
Right.
And I think this could be the start of signing people. Maybe it's the end of signing people. I don't know. What I do know is that I'm grateful for this opportunity and this chance, because this day will be talked on to the day I die, you know? And I had the honor to say, you know, I was on the undercard. I fought on that card. You know, I witnessed this fight, you know?
Right. Now, I hate to try to get you to talk about anything you're not supposed to. I don't know what the rules are, but do you know any other fights on the undercard that we haven't heard about?
No. All I know is the ones that we've seen on Boxer. Like, I've known Jesse Hart. And you know, I don't even pay attention to anything but my fight, really, you know?
Right. Well, that's a good answer.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, sir. I didn't get on the call until now. This is Tony the Tornado. I'm one of the co-hosts here. I had to run downstairs for a few moments. And I apologize if this question was asked you already. But one of the things when Rich sent me, all of your information about you being on the show tonight, and the first thing that I thought of was, what an opportunity to fight on possibly, and I'm a guy that I grew up right after the Ali era. But I grew up seeing like Sugar Ray Leonard versus Tommy Hearns and Roberta Duran and Marvin Hagler and the Fab Four, those guys.
The greatest ever.
All those great moments. I'm like, this is the fight, literally, height-wise, could eclipse all of them, and you are going to be there, like, in front of, like, a packed house and millions of people. How exciting is that? You know, it's a time to shine. I mean, how, what is your take on it?
See, I think about that. Like, right now, like, in my head, I'm thinking to myself, wow, man, this is incredible. It's incredible. I can't believe that I'm going to be on this card. I'm the type of person that captures the moment. Like, when I get to the weigh-ins and when it's time to walk to the ring and I look up and I see MGM pay-per-view and I see Mayweather Pacquiao, I feel like I'm going to belong there, you know? Like, right
Absolutely.
Now, I'm thinking in my head, I don't want to fail. I don't want to let people down. I don't want to fail my team. I don't want to fail my family, you know. I don't want to fail my friends. But I know once I start walking to the ring, I'm going to start thinking, fail, that's not even in my – I'm coming – he's going to have to kill me to beat me. He must be crazy. Like, that's how I am mentally. He's going to have to kill me to beat me. There's no way – I'm not going out like that.
Right. And
to them, they may –
No, I was going to say, you were talking about, some of the other cards. I'm a Philadelphia guy. I'm good friends with Jesse Hart's manager. He and I used to train together back about 20 years ago. And as soon as it broke that he was on the card, I mean, he was emailing all of us like, yo, it's like, we got it. We got the shot in front of millions. And I'm like, just thinking what he was saying and collaborating on what you're saying.
It's like, yeah, I mean, I'm sure like most fighters are going to think the way I'm thinking is, right now, you know, we're like, wow, we don't want to fail, but like, we don't want to do this. We don't want to disappoint people. We don't want to disappoint the fans. But you know, once that moment comes, once I weigh in and I look at my opponent, I'm gonna think, man, you beat 11 people. You're 11-0 or 12-0, whatever you are. You haven't beaten me though. You know, we're gonna prove that tomorrow. You know, and that's how I think. Like, I'm very humble. I like to work hard and stay quiet. Like, stay quiet, work hard, and let my actions do the talking in the ring, you know?
Right. The other thing
I'm having problems hearing you. I don't know why.
Is this any better?
Oh, that's better, yeah.
It's better, okay. We've been having storms where I'm at tonight, so I've been having intermediate problems with my connection. The other question is, and this is one that I ask all fighters, amateur or pro, and you kind of, touching on it a little bit, and the one thing I was hit, and this is coming back from my fight career, was when the game face comes on. Now, for me personally, it was when I got my hands taped. So, you know, we would have, like, all the stuff before the card, and, you know, it was a lot of laughing, a lot of, smiling, and like, oh, my God, I'm going to fight tonight. This is all cool. But then once the coach started taping my hands and he started talking, he would look you right in the eyes when he did it, and he would start getting real intense. And I'll never forget his one speech because I was fighting in my home arena. And the kids, they were fighting, getting the scouting on him. You know, they were bringing him in. I didn't really know who he was. And he goes, you know, this is the last time you're fighting in this arena, you know, before you graduate. And it's like, you know, your friends are seeing you for the last time tonight. You know, do you want to go out on a bad note? No, you don't. And he goes, we don't know nothing about this kid. So you go out there and you punch him right in the mouth when that bell rings. You just go out there and you blast him. And then your crowd will get into it, and he'll know that he's in the hornet's nest. And that's what mentally psyched me up. What is the switch that turns you on when it's fight time?
My game face, to be honest to you, my game face starts as soon as I finish, as soon as the weigh-in's over, my game face is on. I go in my room, I close the curtains, I shut the door, shut the lights, and I lock myself in almost like a prison. And I watch movies, and I have the lights off, and I don't want to be outside. I don't want to be communicating with anybody or talking to anybody. I just want to stay there by myself in my own little world. So it's time to walk to the locker room the next day. When they say,
okay.
Step into the locker rooms, I shower. I do the same thing every fight. I shower. I say a little prayer in the shower, and I wish the safety of both fighters, me and my opponent, because, of course, during the heat of combat, I don't care what happens to him. But, you know, once the fight is over, I want him to be healthy, you know?
Oh, of course.
I want to
be a world brother.
Of course you don't care. It's like he's trying to hurt you, you're trying to hurt him. It's the way it goes. And so, it switches up because I want him to be healthy. I want him to be happy. I want him to, you know, but as well as I say a prayer for myself. And then I walk down to the locker room, and then as soon as I hit the locker room, I'm ready to go. I'm in that zone. I've been in the zone for a day already. I'm ready to get in the ring.
All right.
And the only time I get nervous is when I'm getting my hands up. When I'm getting my hands up, I'm a little nervous. And that's because I don't get to do what I want to do. If I want to bounce, if I want to walk, if I want to stretch, you know, I don't get to do that. I have to sit there and get my hands up, you know? That's the only time.
Right, you got to sit still.
I got to sit still. I get a little inchy, that's it.
And kind of just me, when I first got into fighting in the first place, is when I was a kid. And my mom died when I was young, and people used to always say mother at the time in the 80s. You know, as a response to any insult, it was mother. So I kind of had this chip on my shoulder. I think everybody should know that my mother is no longer around, and that's not cool.
Right.
So somebody would make a joke, and then I would snap, and that's when my switch went the first time. And something that I always loved about those moments, even though I was personally scared of them, because of what I could do to people in that state of mind, was that everything came naturally. It was all instinct. You didn't have time to think about what you were supposed to do or how you were supposed to do it. You just reacted to the situation.
And
your primal instinct came out, all of a sudden. And that's what got me into boxing, because I had to channel it somehow.
Of course.
I broke some kid's arm, and I was just like, wow, I can't be doing that.
We're the same kind of history because, like, you know, I did the same thing. When I was living in London, I got in a lot of street fights. I got in a lot of street fights in London, a lot of street fights. I came to America. I got in fights again because I'm the type, I have a real straightforward character, you know, and I don't appreciate people, like, mocking me. You know, when the kids mock, you know, you're at that age, you know. They're mocking, mocking my accent, mocking the way I dress because I was different to them at that time. I got a lot of fights. I went to a boxing gym, and it humbled me. It's like, that's not the way. You don't need to do that, you know?
Yeah.
I was arrested twice for assault and battery before I went to the bar, you know? So it's pretty much saved me. Who knows how it would happen if I didn't go into the boxing gym because I didn't know, how to channel your anger.
Yeah, everybody who's ever been good at it has had some kind of rage inside of them.
Of course, yeah.
Them in prison if they didn't get a hold of it at an early enough age, you know. And I think boxing has done so many good things for so many, just not only kids, but neighborhoods who have had a boxing gym there to scoop some of these people from troublemakers.
Well, that's the beautiful thing about the boxing gym and the boxing ring. It's like, you know, you got an issue with whoever over here. Here's the thing. You two can put the gloves on, It's going to be supervised. It's going to be, you know, clean.
Legal.
Nobody's going to get hurt. And then when it's over, it's over. You get too many kids out on the streets today that if me and you get in a fight and I win, you're running out and you're getting your boys or you're grabbing a bat or you're grabbing a gun. And it doesn't end there. It gets worse. It escalates. And then you come back and your boys jump me. Then I run and I grab my boys. The next thing you know, you're getting a full-on gang fight. And you're getting drive-by shootings where innocent people, you know, are sitting there. And they're the ones that are suffering. They're the ones getting hurt.
I tell you what that is. That has not, all that has, all that is, there's a word for people like that. And the word is coward.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
It's a coward. You're a coward. Buxton separates the men from the boys. You know?
You're right. Absolutely.
And I can always tell, like, I respect all fighters. There's fighters out there I don't like personally. I don't like them in the way they win because they don't show me heart or they seem like soft to me, you know. But I respect them because they go in the ring. I can always tell someone. Who hasn't fought because they're the person in the audience booing. So they're booing because they've never ever been in the ring. They don't even know what it's like to step through that ring and put your life on the line. And they're disrespectful. And that's what I look at. And I look at them as a coward. You're a chump. You know, I'll never respect a man that boos.
You know, it's funny. About 5 or 6 years ago, being from Philadelphia, I'm in a hotbed of boxing. I get to go to a lot of fights, local area. And there was one arena, it's not open anymore, and hopefully it does not get demolished, called the Blue Horizon, very famous boxing arena in Philadelphia. And I went to about, I don't know, 60, 70, 80 cards there over, you know, my years. And I remember I was at a card one time, and there was a kid fighting, and his brother actually fought for a world title, and his brother lost to Ricky Hatton. So his brother was a little bit, you know, better pedigree of a fighter. But the older brother, you know, he was a guy, short, stocky guy, and at the time, he was using boxing to kind of get in shape, and then they realized he had some talent. So he was about maybe 5'8", and he was like 240 pounds, you know, soft around the gut area. But I watched him fight, and he fought a guy from my old gym, and he beat him. About a month prior, I was in the audience. And then a couple weeks later, he's fighting at the Blue Horizon. And the Blue Horizon was known because they had real close bleachers where you could actually talk to the fighters. And he steps in there, and he gets caught in the first round with an uppercut. And he gets buckled pretty good, and he goes down, gets up, referee stops the fight. Well, there was a couple guys there in the audience, and you could tell they had maybe just come from work, and like they were probably working somewhere in Center City, Philadelphia, one of the corporations or wherever, because they had on like all suits and ties, definitely not fight attire. All suits and ties, and they were drinking pretty heavy. And the one guy just kept it up, you know, agitizing him. You're a fat slob. You're a loser. You're a bum. You're no good, you fat piece of blah, blah, blah. And he's really belligerent. And you could see this guy, and whose also name was Richard. Richard was going like, he was waving the guy away, like, you know, leave me alone. And remember, I'm standing about 3 rows behind this guy that's running his mouth. And I could clearly hear Richard say, point up to the guy and say, I'm coming up there. I said, oh, Jesus Christ. So I'm standing there, and a couple of minutes later, I'm talking to somebody. I get a tap on my shoulder, and I turn around, and here's Richard with a black eye, and he's busted up a little bit. He's like, excuse me, you mind if I get by? And I'm like, oh, man, don't do it. Don't do it, man. I said, the guy's not worth it. I said, he's not worth it. And I'm trying to, you know, calm him down. He's like, no, I'm going in there, and I'm kicking his ass. And I'm like, no, dude, don't do it, you know. And Richard's friend was with him. And the guy's like, I'm going down there. And Richard's like, no, this is my argument. I'm going down there and I'm smacking this guy in the mouth. And I'm like, no, man, listen. I saw you a month ago. You fought so-and-so. He's one of Rev's boys. I know Rev. Rev's my old trainer. You know, you kicked his ass. You did a great job. So now Rich is more in tune to talking to me about fighting one of Rev Thompson's boys a month ago than beating this guy up anymore. He's like, oh, you used to train with Rev Thompson? Oh, my God, that's really cool. And then as I got him distracted, you hear a commotion because we both lost sight of Rich's boy. Rich's boy went down there and punched this guy in his mouth and split his eye wide open. And the guy's brand-new business suit was covered in blood. And this guy that punched him takes off. And security's chasing after him. And Rich turns to me and he goes, so how long have you been with Rev Thompson? I'm like, you might want to get out of here. So I did a fight card about 6 months. I had a fight card about 6 months later, and this guy Rich is fighting on the card, and he wins by knockout. So I pull him aside, and I'm like, "Hey, man, nice fight tonight." And he said, "Oh, thank you very much." And I said, "You don't recognize me, do you?" And he's like, "No, I don't." I said, "You had a little bit of an incident at the Blue Horizon about 6 months ago." He's like, "I didn't do anything." I said, "I know you didn't. I'm the guy that stopped you." He's like, "Oh, my God, I do know. You're one of Rev's boys." I said, "Exactly." He goes, "That guy's trying to sue me, you know, whatever." And I'm like, "Well, if you need a witness in court that you did not hit this guy, here's my name and my number. Give me a call. I will testify. I'm the guy that stopped you from whipping his ass."
Yeah. That's great, though. Well, the truth is, one, it's great that he didn't do it, and two, I'm happy he did get his ass whipped, because now he'll never
Exactly.
And also, his friend, that's a good friend that he has, because he stuck up for Richard, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I know one time, my dad tells this story. My dad loves this story more than I do. I was fighting out in Reno, Nevada back in 1998. I actually fought a guy that our host on here, Mr. Bergeron, actually beat a month later. But I'm fighting this guy, and I should not have slugged with him. I should have boxed him, but some of his fans were so antagonistic. As I'm walking to the ring with my mind saying, box, 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 because this guy has bad feet and he has no mobility. If I box him, I whitewash him. Yeah, easy. But his fans got into my mind. Never happened to me before ever that somebody got in my mind. But his fans were saying, "I hope you die tonight. I hope you dance." And I'm dumping that. And I'm like telling him to go to hell as I'm walking in the ring. I'm like, "Now I'm going to whip this guy's ass in front of his, you know, his boys." And I hurt him bad in the first round, but I also hurt my hand. I hurt him bad in the second round. I hurt my other hand. Third round, didn't throw any punches. He gets the decision. And after the fight was over, I'm kind of pissed off because, you know, I lost the decision, you know, in his hometown, but I'm still mad. And then somebody in the crowd started, like, saying some insulting things. I didn't hear them, but my father did. Now, my father right now, so he was about 50 years old at the time and built like a tank. And my father, with that Italian temper, He stormed up to the crowd, and actually he said it was like the sea parting because people got out of his way, and that guy who was 20-some years old ran away from a guy that was 50 years old.
Of course. I expect, you know why? Because people that talk as much as that, they're not really, but they don't about it. They that's all they're good at. They're good at talking. That's it. There's so many times that back in the day when I've had people yelling, I tell my friends all the time, like, I tell them, when someone's yelling at you, screaming, "I'm going to kick his ass and take him off his watch," all they're doing is buying time or trying to intimidate you from a fight. That's all they do.
Right.
Eddie Murphy.
Be careful of the ones that are quiet, the ones that are silent.
Yeah.
They're the ones you got to watch out for.
Yeah. There's another one I always tell. I'm a guy, like, if I go out to like a place or a club or an establishment, my goal is, no matter where I go, I want people to want to wait on my table, or I want people to want to take my order, because I always want to be polite. I want to tip well, and I want to treat the doorman as well as the waitress or the bartender or whoever, the owner. I want to be polite to everybody, and that way you want me to come back. I want to be a good patron. And there's a nightclub outside of Philadelphia, and it's more of like a suburban type of bar. It's not really, you know, where you have to dress up. It's a place where, you know, college kids can go. It's a place, but where other, like, people like in their 20s and 30s can go and be more relaxed. And they do a lot of bands there. I'm friends with a lot of the bands. And I was there one night, and a friend of mine that goes there is handicapped. So we bring him in, and we put him up on the stage so he doesn't have to stand. He can lean on the stage. And one girl that I was hanging with was going to check on him, and when she walked away, a guy came up, and he about 6'2", I'm about 5'8". He pushed me out of the way to heckle a guy playing guitar in the band, to be like a real drunk jerk. And I'm like, "All right, I'm not worried about this guy. He's a loudmouth. He's a coward. He's an idiot." And but when his friends went to try to get him off the dance floor, so they didn't get thrown out. He lashed out and he like tried to push them away, and in the process he elbowed me right in the face.
Oh, hell no.
And yeah, exactly. Oh, hell no. Because my temper kicked in, my Italian temper kicked in, and I got him by his throat. And I pushed him off the dance floor, and I said a few choice words. And he goes, "You want to fight?" And I got my stance. I said, "Let's dance." And he said, "You want some? You want some? You want some?" I said, "I'm right here. Let's go." And he said, "Come on. Come on." And I'm like, I haven't moved. And I got my hand, and like I did the Ulster Gray Leonard trick. I drew three lines, a line in front and two lines to the side. I said, whatever line he crosses is where I hit him. He comes in front, he gets a left hook. I said, he steps one way, he gets a right hand. He steps the other way, he gets an uppercut. I said, no matter what way he goes, he's getting hit. And he kept it up. You want some? You want some? So the bouncers grabbed him. Then he really started going. And I said, listen.
That's what every old Gray is then.
Oh, yeah. The bouncers had him, and then the bouncers had his boys. Then his boys started talking. I said, you know what? I'll see all three of you outside. I said, I'll see all three of you outside, and all three of you are going to get carried out. And two off-duty bouncers actually got up from the bar. They were there drinking. They got up from the bar, and they were like the offensive line. They got in front of me, and they said, Tony, no. I said, guys, I'll take all three of them. Don't worry about it. They said, no, we cannot have their blood on our hands tonight because we can get in a lot of trouble. And they actually sat me at the bar and stood in front of me until they got radio contact that those guys actually drove off or were taken away or however it worked. And then they said, you know what? For you not going outside, your tab the rest of the night is on the house.
That's a good night for you.
Except they got a black eye out of it.
That's why it's stuck.
I know, from the elbow, right?
Big pen.
Yeah.
See, me, if I go elbow to the face, I don't know how I react, because I'm very calm until my face is shut. So much as my face, I lose it, kind of.
Yeah,
and I did. I lost it, and I just got the guy by his throat. Grabbed the guy by his throat, and I shoved him. And when I gave him a shove, he went about 10 feet. And then that's when you want to tell them, but let's go.
When I see guys like that, they're a dime a dozen. They you see them everywhere. Like, that's why I really don't go out much. I really don't have many friends or talk to anybody, because I don't get along with people in the Hollywood area. You know, I'm just not the same. Like, they're very two-faced, and I'm very direct. I'm not going to smile on your face and then talk about it back to you. I'm going to tell you. You don't know by the way I say hello, or if I say hello, or the way I look at you, just get the hell out of the way. You know what I'm saying? That's the way I've always been. People can't deal with that here.
Yeah, I can imagine there's a lot of stuffy people out on the West Coast there.
Oh, I bet.
I'm just curious to know, real quick, who do you got in the big fight, the main event there, Manny or Floyd?
I train at Wild Cards, you know, so I feel...
To
be honest, I have Floyd winning the fight. I think the first four rounds are going to be competitive. I think Floyd's just going to catch on to his timing, catch on to his rhythm, and then